Come on. Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, the strong and powerful Robert C. Wright. Robert, are you ready to do this?
Ready to go.
Excellent. Let's do this. Bob is the Chief Investment and Chief Information Officer at Madison Avenue Securities, and is an industry veteran. I'm excited to have you on. Bob, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why it is you do what you do.
Experience is just a nice way of saying I'm old. Thank you very much for that. I started out as a lawyer, and I'm a recovering attorney today. I spent 10 years practicing law, and I hated it. But I had clients who were Wall Street people, and back in the early 90s, they suggested I go to work on Wall Street. For those of you who have read Michael Lewis's first book, A Liar's Poker, I had basically the same job that Michael had. In my case, it was at Merrill Lynch and at a much lower level. And in Michael's case, it was at Salomon Brothers. So I started at Merrill in 1992. I was there for a bunch of years, initially in New York and then out here in California where I am now. Merrill wanted me to move again, and that was not ideal for me. So I left, and I went to work where I am now. We're a small investment advisor and broker-dealer in San Diego, and I like it a lot. I'm in charge of figuring out the investment platform for our clients, due diligence, as well as education and training for our advisors, pretty much, plus whatever else shows up.
Whatever else needs doing.
That's right. On the personal side, I've been married for almost 40 years.
Congratulations.
To my lovely bride. We have three kids, and all married, all went off the payroll right after college, perhaps my best financial success ever, and six grandchildren.
Oh, that's awesome. Hopefully they're close.
They are not. They are all the way across the country. Mm. All three of our kids grew up in California, and all three ended up just outside Washington, D.C. Go figure.
Interesting. Well, I got it. Well, I'm sure that you have your hands full, and hopefully you get to see them quite a bit. So,
frequent flyer miles add up.
For sure. All right, so you've certainly seen the world of just the financial industry, the world of investing, change quite a bit. Has your approach or your philosophy on investing changed? What is it today?
I think it has to change. If we don't grow and get better, then we're just not paying attention. When I started in the hedge fund area gives a pretty good example of it. When I got started in this business was largely when hedge funds were becoming a big part of the scene. And in those days, hedge fund marketing was really simple. Invest with us, we will make you a fortune. I was in an early pitch meeting for long-term capital management, and it was much smoother than that, but that was really the pitch. We're smarter than everybody. We've got it figured out. We're going to make you a boatload of money. And obviously, it turned out really badly for long-term capital management when the Russian bond market went south. And it also has not gone very well for the hedge fund industry as a whole, and that's reflected in their marketing. Their marketing shifted to will help you beat your index, to today, it's, well, we'll give you better risk-adjusted returns. Your nominal returns may be lousy, but on a risk-adjusted basis, it's better.
Mm.
There's Simon Lack has a really interesting book on hedge funds, and his conclusion, based on a ton of research, and he worked in the hedge fund world for a long, long time, is that over the life of hedge funds, if every dollar invested in them had been invested in T-bills instead, they'd have made more money.
Wow.
And so, if you don't pay attention to that and change your outlook, something is wrong. My approach today is that it's really, really hard to beat the market. The phrase I use is that it's easy to demonstrate that markets are inefficient, but it's still really hard to beat the market. And for most people, especially for younger people, there's no need to beat the market. And I say to my kids who are young and who invest that you don't need to get fancy. Over the long term, if you invest in the market, there's every reason to think you're going to do really well. So there's no need to fuss about it and worry about it. Lower costs are much more important than a fancy strategy. And so if you tax loss harvest, if you keep your costs really low and have broad diversified market exposure, you're going to do almost surely really well over the longer term. And that's my approach for most people most of the time. For people who think they need to beat the market or want to beat the market for some reason, there are ways that you have a chance to, but you have to recognize that your margin of error is high, and you need to understand that and be prepared for that. And secondly, there is tremendous gain to be had with financial planning for managing your taxes, for managing less your asset allocation and more your asset location, for making sure your legal affairs are in order, that you have the appropriate trust, that the estate work is done, and that you're simply prepared on a family basis for what's to come. So my approach is much more holistic and financial planning based than when I started in this business, when it was simply what's rich, what's cheap, how can I make money?
A lot of great stuff there. I appreciate you walking us through that. And I'm with you. I think that simple does not mean bad. I think that the more we can simplify things and make things easy for people to understand, then it's better.
From a behavioral finance basis, there's really good evidence that it's better.
And that Daniel Kahneman, that thinking fast and slow, that line that he said that it's an entire, that financial services or the world of investing is, there's an entire industry built on an illusion of skill. I thought that was a pretty damning statement. What are your thoughts on that?
A whole lot of our industry has been focused on that, and related to your previous point, the use of complexity is largely designed to obfuscate whether we're doing a good job or not. If it's really complex, it's harder to figure out if it makes sense or not. And that's yet another reason why simple is powerful. From a financial planning perspective, as I tell my kids, it's important that you focus on where you can add value, decide how much you really want to be involved, and then find a really good smart advisor that's going to put your interests first. Which is not to say you can't do it yourself if you want to really work at it. In my experience, most people don't want to spend the time or the effort to do financial planning themselves, partly because the information base to do a good job requires a lot of training and experience. And in the same way that I can probably figure out how to redo the electrical wiring in my house, it's not worth it to me. And I think for most people, financial planning is the same way, assuming they can find a really good person to do it. And that's unfortunately not always an easy assumption to make.
No, it's not. I think that everything's moving in the right direction with all the conversation about being a fiduciary advisor and the fiduciary rule. I think probably more people are moving in that direction, which is certainly a positive thing.
I agree.
Talking about different stages of our financial lives, and we can use lots of different terms, but talking about your kids right now, up until the time that they're thinking about retiring, we'll call that the accumulation phase. The distribution phase, which is I'm going to be living off money that I've saved, that's a different animal. Do you think that a different approach to investing is required then, or is it more still a function of financial planning is so important during that phase?
Well,
Probably a little bit of both.
I think the answer depends on, on how you're defining strategy. But what I would say is that good planning is always important. It's particularly difficult during the transition from accumulation to distribution, in your phrase. Prudential made a lot of money talking about the retirement red zone, and without commenting either way on Prudential's proposed solutions, it's a really good thought about what that period is. Whether you define it as 5 or 10 years, 5 to 10 years before retirement to 5 to 10 years after, what you do there is really important. Sequence of return risks, which are basically how much your return is less important than when you get it, matters a lot there. In short, it means if you suffer significant losses shortly after you retire and you are taking income from your portfolio, it can be really difficult to recover from that. And so managing that period can be really difficult and is really important. So that's kind of a long-winded way to say I agree with you, a little bit of both is the right answer.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that is as you know, doing actual retirement planning is such a tricky thing in designing that retirement income because there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer to it. So having a good advisor that you're working with is probably key.
Sure, because we all have different ideas and approaches and responses to what happens in the world. And figuring out what that is or what those are for each individual is really difficult, and a good advisor can help you do that. And I mean a whole lot more than, 10 questions and answering that's what your risk tolerance is. There's more to it than that. You have to figure out how much risk you need to take to get to where you want to go, and then how much risk you have to take based on expected returns and a pretty good approximation of what the future could hold, and then figure out how to resolve the conflicts between those three different conclusions, and in most cases, they are going to exist. So something has to give, and you have to figure out how to make those decisions in the best way you can, and a really good advisor can help you do that.
Got it. So a really big global question for you.
Sure.
Do you think that we're headed in the right direction with personal finance, just the average American? And if yes or if no, what needs to keep going or what needs to change?
Broadly speaking, I think we are going in the right direction. Things are better today than they were 10 years ago, for example. But that's not to say there still isn't a long ways to go. From a big global perspective, I would, while I am hopeful that the SEC can put a global fiduciary standard in place, certainly I would support that. But I think the bigger issue over the long term is raising the bar for the standards for how one can become a financial advisor. It's way too easy to get a license and to hang out a shingle and say, I'm a financial advisor without proving you have the appropriate, the necessary competence, training, education. It's way too easy. And if I were made, king for a day in this area, I would create a plan not to blow people out of the industry who have been in it for a while, but I would create a plan to dramatically increase the level of training and experience required, A, to get a license, and B, to keep a license.
Got it. I appreciate that. Well, Bob, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them, sir?
In my world, we spend a ton of time talking about investment strategy and portfolio maximization, portfolio optimization. When the truth is, by every model of every study done, it is way more important that you save more money and save as aggressively as you can than exactly how you invest the money you've saved. Your savings rate is way more important than the rate of your return on your portfolio. So if the younger you start, the better, the more you save, the better. Compound interest is a marvel. So my one bit of advice to everyone, but especially to younger people, is save as much as you can, as long as you can, and the more you do that, the better off you're going to be in the long term. My secondary advice, especially to younger people, this matters much more to them, is invest in yourself. There are enormous returns, quote unquote, returns available to you by investing in yourself, whether we're talking about school or training or simply reading more. The more you invest in yourself, the better off you're going to be over the longer term. It's true across the board. It's especially true for younger people.
Well, that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So, Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
I write a blog called Above the Market. It's at rpcwright.com. R as in Robert, P as in Paul, Seawright, Seawright .com, and there's contact information there if anybody wants to get in touch.
Excellent. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Bob your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to rpcwrite.com, which I will list in the notes of the show as well. Thank you again, Bob.
Thank you, George. I'm happy to be here.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together. What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on!